You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
You're listening to the podcast of Alive and Kicking, which is broadcast live on News Talk every Sunday morning from 9 a.m.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
You can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up on Alive and Kicking this morning, Lucy Kennedy on writing her second children's book in lockdown and how she keeps healthy and well. I'll also be joined by psychologist and best-selling author of over 40 books, Gay Hendricks. And he'll talk to me about how, of all the people he has met the world over, we are all pretty much the same, all yearning to fulfill our greatest potential and how we can take that leap. So, what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, it was good. I'd have to say I have been relishing the routine that back to school has brought to my house. I know we all learned how important the little things are when they were taken away from us in recent months, but I didn't realise how lovely it is to walk your kids to school, to be productive for those 6 hours of quiet in the house, and then to wait expectantly at the gate for them again to run out to you. It's been magic, and I've been working through lists like nobody's business. My brain is loving being busy. I love being organised. We are creatures who need routine, and I've definitely learned that over the last week or so. So yes, a good week for health and wellness. And Elon Musk was in the headlines this week using three little pigs to demonstrate a new medical device another of his companies, Neuralink, is working on. It's a state-of-the-art neuron reading brain implant, and it has received the preliminary go-ahead from the FDA in the US to continue experimenting. And the pigs, they seemed unharmed in the demonstration, if a little fed up, with one pig having the implant removed to show that it can be reversed safely. But through sniffs and beeps, it basically showed signals between the brain and the pig's snout, and will eventually be placed into the bodies of people with spinal injury to see if it could help regain movement through memory and brain signal alone. Elon Musk was interviewed and he said that the long term for this device, and he himself made the connection to the Netflix series Black Mirror, which gives a none too pleasant look into the future of life merging with technology. So he made the link himself, but he said that the device could be used to help people upload and store their memories, their minds, and download them back down into robotic bodies and AI agents. Now, I love knowing that all my contact details, my photos, my videos are all backed up in a cloud, not just one phone like it was originally. And I have further collections of my precious photos in Dropbox, my hard drive on PhotoBox, because my memories, my photos are very precious to me. And the one thing I'd have to say I struggled with since becoming a parent was that I just couldn't store every single second of their lives and mine in my head. A lot of it is a blur now. I mean, I remember I was there, but not all of it. And often I wish I could replay either days from maternity leave or even days where my husband and I were first together. Just all of the little memories and the things that go on in your life, you just can't, unfortunately, remember them all. Like, if I'd be hard pushed to tell you what I did 2 birthdays ago or for my mum's last birthday, or, you know, there's important information that we just unfortunately can't file away. But I don't know if I really want it all stored in that way. And I do look at my dad as he moves into a different stage of his life. He's in his 80s. And I wonder, as we become a bit more conscious that he's not going to be here forever, would I like to be able to know that all his thoughts and memories were stored somewhere for me or future generations to access? I don't know, it's a bit of a leap, isn't it? What do you think? You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Gay Hendricks, along with his wife Katie, has written more than 40 best-selling books. He has trained thousands of coaches, coached thousands of people himself, appeared on Oprah, and hosted seminars around the globe. His mission is to help people discover what they most love doing and get them to spend more and more time doing it. In his best-selling book, The Big Leap, Gay Hendricks reveals a program for overcoming our barriers to happiness and that fulfillment, not only in financial success, but also success in love and life. And Gay Hendricks is on the line now. Hello, Gay.
Hello, Claire. Good to be talking with you.
It's a fairly big promise to offer fulfillment and success in all areas of life.
Well, I've had a lot of experience in working with people. And one thing I know for sure is that human beings have a tremendous amount more potential than we give ourselves credit for. So I jokingly say that I've been living on a steady diet of miracles for the past 40 years or so. So I've seen people change their bodies, and I've seen people change their minds, and I've seen people get rid of back pain and headache, and I've seen people become billionaires. So I really have a tremendous respect for the power of human beings to invent amazing new lives for ourselves when we find out what the techniques and tools are. You know, it's just like driving a car. If people just flipped you a set of keys when you were 15 or 16 and said, okay, go out there and take it out on the highway and see what you can do, and you'll figure it out. Well, you know, that's how most of us go into relationships, is we don't have any training manual for it. And so we end up creating a lot of unhappiness for ourselves.
And why do people need to live to their fullest potential? What's wrong with coasting along and making peace with your lot?
Yes, well, that coasting along, oftentimes it seems like an easy thing to do, but it's actually a very costly thing to do because, see, human beings have a part of ourselves, I call it our genius zone, inside ourselves that yearns for fulfillment, that there's part of us that really wants to find out what our true creative genius is and bring that out into the world. And I've been around the world now 30 some times over the past 45 years since my first book came out. And one thing I've really become convinced of is that human beings really are the same everywhere. We have different cultural overlays. And I like to come to your culture in Ireland because I found that it's the only place on earth where you can really get a good draft Guinness. And don't bother trying to order one in California because it doesn't travel well. But I can tell you that I've been in, I think, 80 different cultures now. And I've found that one thing that human beings all have in common is we have this yearning inside to find out how much we can make of ourselves. And if we listen to that part and open up and bring it forth, then you get to feel a degree of fulfillment that's very uncommon in human life.
It's interesting in your book, The Big Leap, you mentioned the zones there. Can you explain the zone of competence and the zone of excellence and how you are encouraging people to move into their zone of genius and what that means?
Yes. Well, one thing, when I first started thinking about this, I always joke that I thought about writing The Big Leap for 30 years, and then I took a year to write it. But for the 30 years that I was thinking about it and working with people and applying the ideas, you know, the two big ideas in The Big Leap are the upper limit problem and the tendency to be unhappy until we discover how to live in our genius zone. But let's start by looking at how you spend your daylight hours and your evening hours. And when I really analyzed that and looked at that, I realized people are spending their time either in their zone of competence, where they're doing things that they're pretty good at, but somebody else could do them just as well. Some people are spending a lot of time in the zone of incompetence, where they're doing things they're not very good at and having a hard time doing it. But for most of us, we're kind of rocking along in our zone of competence, where we're doing things that we're okay at, but somebody else could easily replace us. There's another zone, I call it the zone of excellence, where you're doing things that you're really good at, where you're excellent at, that you get good feedback for, that maybe make you get a rise in your salary or you get a promotion in your business or your organization. And that's a good thing. Excellence is a good thing. But I've worked now with, last time I counted, a little over 1,000 business executives and about 20,000 individuals and about 4,500 couples. So based on that broad range of experience, what I found is that we all have this desire inside us, but we don't know how to express it. And what I'm saying to people is, here's how to express it. Find out what's sacred to you inside that you most love to do and put your attention on that. Because in the zone of excellence, you're going to be getting lots of good feedback, but it's not ultimately satisfying. I can't count the number of high-powered business executives, men and women, that I've had here in my office who have said some version of, you know, I'm 40 years old now, I'm really making great money, my family all loves it, and I'm getting good feedback, but if I feel like if I keep doing it at this level, I'm not going to last, I'm going to burn myself out. And that's, you know, whether you call it a midlife crisis or whatever you call it, what that's telling you is that you've been living too long in your zone of excellence. You need to break through to that last zone that I call the genius zone. And that's where you're spending your time doing what you most love to do and what brings you greatest rewards out there in the world. They can be one and the same thing. I came from a place in my life many years ago before I discovered this, that I was doing something completely different with my to earn money than I was about the things that I really felt I loved. And so gradually I began to spend more and more of my time in my genius zone, so that now, since about the late 1990s, I spend now about 90% of my time either in my genius zone or in doing things that get me around from place to place or manage that whole process. But that's a big difference from when I first started thinking about this 30 years ago. I was only doing like 10% of my time doing the things that I most love to do. So my challenge to all of your listeners is to find out what you most love to do and find out how to do that more and more and more and share that with other people so that you can really bring the best of yourself out into the world.
I think people don't really believe that that is possible, that there's only a few Elon Musks in the world that really excel and that life is meant to be hard and we get mortgages and we get families and we just get working and we get by. And you talk about that also, how we have an upper limit, that there's only a certain amount of happiness and success that we allow ourselves.
Yes. And the upper limit problem is something, again, that I've observed all over the world. So it's not anything that's particularly European or American or any particular culture. But listen to this. Oftentimes what happens is right after you have a big breakthrough, right after something good happens, or you get a raise, or you have more of a wonderful weekend of intimacy with your partner, what happens is often that good feeling triggers the upper limit problem, because most of us aren't very skilled at allowing ourselves to feel organically good for long periods of time. And so I can even remember in my family, you know, when I was a kid, I would be on fire about some subject or happy about something, and someone would say, you know, calm down now, calm down. You're counting your chickens before they hatch. You know, don't get so excited. And I think a lot of us kind of begin to tuck our light inside and hide our organic, natural, God-given light inside in favor of kind of, you know, doing things just to make money or doing things that we think we're supposed to do. But what we've got to make sure that we don't do in human life is to let that little spark of creativity snuff out. Because once you do that, you kind of get a sense of despair and a sense of discouragement. But what I recommend is to start simply and small by simply asking yourself, what could I do for 10 minutes today that I really love to do? Like Claire, I had a very successful guy come in. He was a dentist about age 40. And this is a great example because he had been living in his zone of excellence for ages. His father had been a very successful dentist and had passed the practice on down to his son. And now his son was 12, his own son was now 12 years old. And he was already talking to that son about taking over the practice and becoming the third generation. But here was the problem. That son didn't want anything to do with being a dentist and made it very clear, as teenagers will sometimes obnoxiously do. They'll make it really clear to us when they're not going along with the program. And so he was hitting this conflict with his own son. So he was talking to me about it in therapy. And I said, well, hey, how about just take a moment and try on that point of view of your son's. Was there ever a time in your life when you didn't want to be a dentist? And you know what, Claire? He burst into tears. And he said, honestly, I never wanted to be a dentist. It was this huge moment. He kind of turned, you know, almost white all over. He was like pale, and because he was faced with something that he had made a decision about a long time ago. Now, the solution wasn't to have him sell his dental practice and run away to a cave in Tibet or, you know, canoe trip around Tahiti or anything like that. He didn't have to go anywhere. What he did was I asked him to start doing what he most loved to do 10 minutes a day, which in his case was writing poetry. He had kind of let go of writing poetry when he was a teenager because he got into, you know, dental school and all that when he was in college and kind of fell into the family pattern. And then what happened, though, was the moment he started writing these poems again, it was like a kind of a light depression lifted off of him. And it was so beautiful to see. And actually, he ended up getting a few poems published in magazines. And so it was, I mean, it wasn't enough to make a living off of, but it was certainly a spark to keep his creativity alive. So anyway, the point I'm making is you don't have to go meditate in 10 years in a cave to get what I'm talking about. Just put aside 10 minutes today. Everybody's got 10 minutes, and do something you really love to do, whatever it is.
It's really interesting because you do wonder, what if I really love to play tennis? Does that mean I have to get out there and become the next Roger Federer? But it's not that. It's not about turning your whole life upside down. It's just about introducing more of it in to fill yourself up.
Yeah, yes. And actually, that's a great point, Claire, because see, a lot of times if they think, okay, let's say I'm really good at tennis. Well, I'm not suggesting that you need to become a professional tennis player. What you need to do, though, is find out what it is about tennis that makes you love it, and then find out how to transfer that into other areas of your life. Because I can promise you, from having worked with a lot of people, that if you can figure out what it is you love about tennis or chess or cooking, what is it that you really love about it, you can find ways to apply that to other areas of your life. Like one of my old mentors, Milton Erickson, used to say that when he was working with a couple about improving their sexuality, he wouldn't work directly on their sexuality. He would have them learn how to make a salad together in the kitchen and how to kind of blend together their activities rather than just coming in and immediately approaching it as a sexual issue. He wanted to help them learn how to kind of feel each other's presence and kind of play with each other in a creative way that wasn't necessarily suggestive of sex. And so if you can figure out, like for me, I love to write. And one of the things I love to do is write, because in that space of writing, I get the full access of my creativity. I can just play in that creative zone. But, you know, at the same time, I've learned how to do that in my marriage. Katie and I have been together now 40 years. And you know, people all the time bring to our attention, they say, you guys are like newlyweds. And that's because we don't ever you know, hold each other in a box in any way. We're always kind of playing and exploring new things together and talking about different ideas. And so to me, we can always learn to apply the things we love and how to do it into other areas of your life and find out how to extend that experience of loving what you do into all sorts of things like your relationship and your business area.
Well, when was The Big Leap first written? Because at the time of writing it, you say yourself and Katie hadn't had an argument for 12 years. Is that still the case? And what is the time on it now?
Yes, The Big Leap came out about 10 years ago. And yes, we haven't had an argument since we moved into this house. We probably hadn't had one for years before then, but I happen to know because we moved into this house 20 years ago. And nobody in this house has said a harsh or critical word to the other person in 20 years. And, you know, people find that hard to believe, but, you know, Katie and I, 40 years ago, we had the same old problems as everybody else did. We criticized each other. We got into hassles with each other and yada, yada, the same old thing. But we found ways to do that. Like, for example, in our book, Conscious Loving, which was the first one we were on Oprah, you mentioned Oprah earlier, that was our first book that we were on Oprah with. And it's controversial because we were talking about people telling the truth to each other. And particularly, we were talking about how to take responsibility for things that come up, but do it in a way that doesn't blame the other person. And how to bring up things that you might criticize in the other person, but without doing it in a critical way. And so we show how to do that in Conscious Loving. And so we just apply all those things to ourselves. And by golly, they work. And so as a result of that, we haven't had an argument in a long time or a critical word, even in at least 20 years.
And it just builds strength and intimacy, doesn't it? And becomes more of a habit. You can build a habit around anything, a habit of criticizing and arguing and bickering, or a habit of not doing those things. Or as you say, keeping an eye on your behaviors. So you talk as well a lot about keeping an eye on the burden of unfulfillment or barriers that you may have put up to helping yourself achieve all that you want to achieve. So how do you do that? How do you keep an eye on them and stop them in their tracks?
I want to mention the upper limit problem again, because it relates to this question, Claire. The upper limit problem is the tendency to sabotage ourselves when things are going well, and or when things start going a little bit better. And so inevitably, what's going to happen in life is you're going to experience more intimacy, or maybe you experience more money, or experience more good times with a partner, and that's going to then bring up fears, and then you're going to do something to upper limit yourself. But that's the moment of breakthrough. If you can catch yourself in the moment of doing that and then switch to something more authentic, and like I'll give you an example of 30 years ago, I caught myself in the middle of criticizing Katie for something. And that's what started us on this program of eliminating criticism from our relationship. Because in this moment, she had come home late and hadn't told me where she was. And I was kind of criticizing her for coming home late and not telling me. But I realized as I was saying this kind of yeah, 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 critical voice coming out of my mouth, I realized that inside I was actually feeling anxious or scared. And so I actually stopped in my tracks and I said, you know, I hear myself criticizing you, but I'm actually feeling scared or anxious in my belly. And she said, what about? And I realized that I was scared of losing her. We were kind of, you know, we were having these issues come up, these hassles come up, and I was afraid underneath it that we weren't going to make it through them. And so I think I was criticizing her to kind of keep her at a distance, because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to run the risk of losing her. I didn't want to run the risk of it hurting too bad if I lost her. So that was the thing. I was using my criticism as a way to create distance to protect myself from that fear. And it was one of the most electrifying observations, because I just said to her, I'm afraid of losing you. And she said, oh my God, you know, I'm afraid of losing you too. I'm afraid if we keep on having these kind of arguments like this, we're going to start drifting apart. And so it was the beginning of making a kind of a new pact between us, where we said, okay, we're going to eliminate criticism from our relationship, and we're just going to start talking authentically to each other. If I'm scared, I'll tell you about that. If I'm sad, I'll tell you about that. If I'm angry, I'll tell you about that. But I won't get into that criticism thing. And so we started really observing that, and pretty soon it disappeared. It took us a few years, but after a while, we got good at just communicating honestly with each other. And so the criticism stuff just never came up.
That's amazing. And with your upper limit barriers, a lot of that you say is set from your childhood. So how do you unearth those things? It was something that's come up a lot in the course of doing this show and speaking to various health and wellness people. The idea that people can have issues in their life even when they had a very happy childhood or had very loving parents that they still have a good relationship with now. They find it hard to reconcile that there may have been something that they're replaying in their mind and it's holding them back. And how do they unearth that and move on from it?
Yes, well, children and parents everywhere should know one thing, which is there's lots of things that go on in childhood that affect you that don't have anything to do with your parents. So just because, I mean, I'd say your brothers and sisters and friends or acquaintances have more of an effect on you in how you are as an adult than your parents do. I mean, it's great if you had a happy childhood with great parents and everything, but even if you didn't, that's not the only place to look. You know, a lot of our programming comes from our brothers and sisters and other people, not just from parents. So, but the way to handle it is always just the same. When you notice some kind of issue come up, it's good to look back and say, where would I have first connected with that issue? Where would I have first learned that? Because, like, for example, I had, when I was beginning to first figure all this out, I was beginning to ask myself, okay, what is really my genius? And I thought, what do I really love to do? And when I really got down to the nub of it, it was that I love to work one-on-one or with groups of people on helping them solve the most essential problems they have to solve and helping them create the biggest contribution that they can make with their lives. That's really what I most love to do. And if I can be doing that, I'm happy. Well, you know, the first thing that came into my mind when I figured that out was I heard a voice in my mind that said, you can never make a living doing that. And I realized, wait a minute, where did that voice come from? And it was actually my older brother's voice. And my older brother is a very practical, he's an engineer, he's 8 years older than I am, he's an engineer, very solid, he can fix anything, he can fix a car, he can fix anything, but he's not very good at the whole emotional side of life or anything like that, not very good at communicating emotions. So, but here I was taking advice from my older brother about whether I can make a living doing what I most love to do. So sometimes you have to disqualify whatever authorities are speaking in your mind about what's possible. Because once I realized, oh, that's just a voice from my childhood. I don't really have to pay attention to that anymore. So sure enough, I started organizing groups and doing things more and more. And I had a university position at the time. For 21 years, I was a professor at the University of Colorado. And so I went into my dean and I said, look, I just had this realization that I want to do more and more teaching of what's most essential to me. And I'm having to teach a couple of courses that I just can't stand teaching. How about if, as an experiment, one semester, I offer this course that I really want to teach and let's see if anybody takes it. Well, sure enough, it was a big popular success, and they ended up asking me to do it on cable TV and that kind of thing. So it turned out really great, and so everybody was happy. But even if it hadn't been a big success, it would have been a success for me just to see if it was possible. So what I'm saying is that really, no matter where you are in life, there's always this possibility of opening up a bigger conversation with the things you most love to do and putting them to work for you out there in the world.
I think it's interesting. We think that once we unearth whatever that is, we're going to have to sit in front of a psychiatrist or a psychologist for months on end to fix it all and tease it all out. And sometimes just acknowledging it and realizing what it is and shining a light on it. As you say, there might be some cleaning up to do, but that's much easier to do when the light is on. I could literally talk to you all day, Gay, but I had better not. For more on Gay Hendricks' work, his seminars and his book, along with Katie, go to hendricks.com. Gay Hendricks, PhD, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks so much, Claire.
Coming up after the break, I speak to TV presenter Lucy Kennedy about her latest children's book that she wrote in lockdown.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Lucy Kennedy is one of Ireland's most loved TV personalities, from Podge and Raj to Ireland's Got Talent and everything in between. Most people would like a go of living with Lucy. And as she's a pal of mine, I'm happy to report that what you see is what you get. We have worked together in three different companies now. I'm not sure who is following who, but she's on the line now to talk about the second of her children's book series, The Friendship Fairies. This one is Aww. The Friendship Fairies Go to School. Hello, Lucy.
I'm following you. I'm clean now, definitely.
My God, stalker.
Are we working together for like... Is it 20 years when I say that?
God, don't say that out loud. But yeah, I mean, we were babies, weren't we? We were teenagers going around in the suits, in the parasuits, because it was a marketing company that we worked in first, or a marketing department, and two of us, you in the Jeeps, me back at the base.
But like a fine wine, my friend. I think we're improving the page.
Of course. And you're right. We are still babies. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is what you got up to during lockdown. You wrote a second book.
I wrote a second book. I mean, I just like to point out that I found lockdown absolutely agony, like all other parents. I think childbirth was easier than homeschooling. So I have three smallies, so 10-year-old, 8-year-old, 3-year-old. So obviously then doing Brecky Radio, potty training Jess, who'd kind of announced that she needs to poo during the weather, and then trying to homeschool my other two. And, you know, I have very basic maths and Irish, so it kind of got to the stage where I'd have to lie to them and say, oh, look, I'm just too busy. Can you ask your dad? So embarrassing. But yeah, so amongst all that chaos, I wrote my second children's book. So the first one, obviously, last year, 10 months ago only, was The Friendship Fairies. And that just kind of established the three sisters. They're three little girls and they're fairies, but they're not fairies. They're more kind of sexy bottoms and normal fairies, if you know what I mean, my kind of girls. And then this year, they're obviously a year older, and the eldest fairy is going to school. So we wanted to get it out in time. Because look, you know what it's like, Claire. You have smallies. It's such a scary time for children going back to school. Very exciting. They don't know what's going on. You know, things have changed, but it's a lot for them all to take in. So we wanted to get the book out in time as a nice distraction, hopefully make them giggle.
And we really big it up for them, don't we? We're like, big school. Yeah. Oh my God, big school. And
big time.
You swear you're not going to turn into the kind of grown up. But every grown up that I've met with my kids now for the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or 2 months is like, are you looking forward to going back to school? I mean, what kind of question is that to ask kids? And I'm looking at my own friends saying, are you really asking them this? And they're just looking at them like they're crazy. But we make it into this big, huge deal when really we should just drop them at the gate and say, see you.
Yeah, exactly. And look, and you know what I've like, my attitude to all of the last 7 months, I can't believe it's 7 months, is I've answered questions that they've asked me. But I haven't been bombarding them with information, because it is a lot for them to take in. And at the end of the day, they're children, and they should be children, and they shouldn't have to worry about all this as well. So I'm not going to lie to you. I am very, very happy that mine have gone back to school.
Yeah, I know the pandemic has taught us a lot about the little things, from having a cup of tea with your mum to, all the to a hug, to the very simple things and how important they are. I didn't realise how much I enjoyed walking the kids to school and then waiting for them to pick them up, to kind of miss them and be looking forward to seeing them as opposed to just living with them day after day.
Very much so. Like on Monday morning, ours went back and half of me was like, "Whoa!" hanging at the window playing music. And then after about an hour, I thought, God, the house is so quiet, you know. But it's been such a surreal 7 months. And in a lot of ways, it has been a blessing in disguise. Obviously, it's had its horrors. But I've really got to spend some proper time with our children because like you, I'm a working mum. And if I'm not living with a celebrity, I'm doing something else. So it was quite nice to actually stop and to have to stop. And just to sit down and play Scrabble, you know, I did enjoy it. I'm not going to lie to you.
No, there definitely were lots of silver linings. Yeah. So what did you want to cover about going back to school to get through to kids?
Well, I suppose just in my book, the eldest fairy is starting a brand new school with a brand new class and she doesn't know anyone. And she does encounter some school children who weren't very nice to her. I suppose it was just kind of dealing with the butterflies in your tummy the night before, which we all get before something new, and then just dealing with it, I suppose, is the easiest way. Like my book's for pretty much 3 to 9 year olds, so we don't delve in too much, but it's just for any child who is starting a school or starting a new class and making new friends. They'll be able to relate to this and know that how they feel the butterflies in their tummy, that's okay.
And it does make a difference, I think, if a message comes through a book. I mean, you can sit them down and tell them this and that, but, you know, while you are such a central figure in their life, you are just their parent and they're not sure you have it all sussed out, which is actually quite an insight. But if you read it together in a book, they will think about that fairy or that character.
Yes, they will. And they can relate to that character. And I hope that there are little children out there, you know, who have tricky times, whether it's at home or in school, that they can kind of switch off and go into the fairy world where it's safe and happy.
And do you talk to your kids about things that might arise in their life, maybe bullying or anything along those lines, or do you wait for something to come up first and handle it then?
I wait for something to come up, if I'm honest, because I just think it's just so much for them to absorb. And like now, you know, they're just surrounded by so much stuff that we weren't. And I'm painfully aware, I mean, if I could press freeze, I genuinely would at the ages they are. They're just so innocent, so happy. And I don't want them to know about anything they don't need to know about. So obviously, if there was a problem with one of them in school or with friends or whatever it is, an argument with a pal, I'll deal with it as it comes my way. But I don't generally offer information unless they ask me.
I know, I'm the same. And it is hard. Yeah. Not to get involved and micromanage everything that they do, to sort of just start to let them go and make their own decisions and realise that sometimes they don't get on with everybody and sometimes everybody isn't nice, and you can give them the message of kindness. But I think it's a good lesson that it can't always be perfect all of the time, and let them just deal with their own problems. I find it hard not to march into every row and sort the other kid out.
Yes, it's a lioness and her cubs. Like, God forbid anybody would like one of my children. It makes me feel sick. But it is going to happen. And they kind of have to deal with it. I suppose we just kind of hover in the background, pretend that we're not involved, but we are, you know.
You're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk. And I'm talking to Lucy Kennedy about her latest children's book, The Friendship Fairies Go to School. And we're talking about parenting. And what surprised you most about being a parent?
What surprising us? Well, I was always a softie. I think I'm particularly soft now. I think I am a complete wuss. I look back at how cool I once was, leaning up against the bar at Padgham Lodge in leather. and now I cry watching Peppa Pig. I think motherhood is definitely, I was never hard. I suppose I didn't realize how soft I really am. And I think motherhood has softened me and definitely made me a nicer person, in some ways a weaker person and in other ways a stronger person. I don't know. I love it. It is my favorite thing to do. And if I wasn't 44 and lost, I would be very tempted to have another baby. But I would obviously be a single parent because Richie would be last seen running out of the house. But I love being a mom. I know you're the same, aren't you?
I do. Now, like, my most surprising part of parenting was that I wasn't as calm and chilled as I thought I was. I thought I was...
You are calm and chilled.
I really am, until kids don't listen to me and I say the same thing five times. The next thing, yes, my head is blowing off and I was like, I'll never be the parent that shouts at their kids. So that really shocked me, that under pressure... In work situations, I'm fine. Throw me in front of live television, no problem. But with a baby in one hand and a toddler crying on the floor, I crumbled. I crumbled by times, but I've come out the other side stronger and better. So you say you're softer. Totally. I realised I was a bit harder than I thought.
Yeah, but you know what? You show me a perfect mother and I will show you a liar. We all have our faults and we're all just doing our best. You know, like, you don't get a manual when you live in Coombe or Hollis Street. You've literally just got to get on with it yourself. Trust your instinct and try and be the best mom you can be, you know? I'd say my children probably think I'm a psycho, but I think I'm a wonderful mother, you know?
Same. And as this is a health and wellness show, Lucy, what does that mean for you? How do you keep yourself healthy and well?
I keep myself healthy and well by drinking an obscene amount of Malbec. No, I do yoga once a week and I need yoga because, you know, I have verbal diarrhea. I never stop talking. And it's the only time in the week that I'm actually not allowed to because it would kind of disturb the others during Shavasana. But I do yoga and then I walk. I need to walk. And I kind of walk around the block. It could be just 20 minutes and I talk to myself. I say most people think I'm on the phone or listening to music, but I'm actually talking to myself. And that's like where I walk out and go, you know, that moment of just, oh my God, because it can all be so overwhelming when you have 86 jobs and 53 kids and you're tired and yada, 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 like we all are. That is my time just to kind of breathe, you know.
And when you head out, you come back a different person. I mean, it's definitely crazy, but you really do. You walk it all out. And what seemed like a big problem and overwhelming, a good walk or a good night's sleep, it's gone. It's more manageable anyway.
Yes. Now, I do need my sleep as well, now that you mention it. And like on paper, a breakfast show does not suit my nature because I need at least 8 hours sleep. At least. If I could get 10, I would kind of go for it. But I think getting to bed at a reasonable hour as well, getting off your phone, getting off, you know, screens and tellies and all that jazz definitely helps your mood. So yeah, a good night's kip and I can take on the world. Broken sleep and I just want to cry in my pajamas.
Yeah, no, good advice. I think charging your phone in another room and investing in another alarm clock is an absolute gift. And just opening a book and falling asleep to the pages of that is so much better because, you know, an hour can go and you're still scrolling Rosie Huntington Whiteley's pictures of her life in LA. And how is that serving you?
I know. Or me looking at dogs being rescued. But I often kind of look at Instagram and think, okay, like this is the Instagram life. It's not real. Everyone else is like me in pajamas, very unattractive ones, with Sudocream on their spots, their hair in a ponytail, you know, looking their worst, looking at other lives too. I think Instagram is just giving such a bad message in that life is perfect. It's not. It's not. But we all kind of look at each other and think, oh my God, their life is great. But it's not. It's just through a different lens, isn't it?
Everyone's exactly the same. So what are you up to? You've been presenting your radio program from your dining room. You've another Living with Lucy series on the way. So who are some of the people you're staying with this time?
Well, I can't tell you who they are. So we've changed from Living with Lucy to Lodging with Lucy. Because of COVID-19, obviously, I can't travel. And I can't live in people's houses.
Right. So, I thought you kind of had the series in the bag. No, this is, you're going to be filming. Right. So you have to socially distance from them.
Yeah. So this afternoon, I'm going off to film our fourth episode. So basically now we have this really posh gaff in the country. And it's like a, you know, mansion type Georgian house with two wings. So the celebrity's in one wing, I'm in the other. And we basically meet there and they have the option of spending the day with me in the evening or they can stay the night. It's very much what they want. And then all at 2 meters. But you won't notice because like we're all fed up with COVID-19. When you watch it on the telly, you won't feel that we're socially distanced, obviously. You know yourself with telly, it's all about the angles. But the reality is we are, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a strange old feeling. I kind of get lost in a conversation and then I kind of look to a camera and I see masks. But you won't feel it on the telly. It's like a version of Living with Lucy, but I'm not in their house.
And they can't escape. They're in the lodge with you.
They can't escape.
And they've got to just tell their story.
Yeah, pretty much. And we have a chef.
Yes, you're living the dream.
Living the dream and piling on the pounds. It's my life. Yeah.
Well, look, keep doing what you're doing because
Thank
you do it so well. May we
Thank
continue
you,
to work together for the next 20 years.
Oh, God.
The Friendship Fairies Go to School is available from all good bookshops now. Lucy Kennedy, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So that's it from Alive and Kicking for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can catch it on podcast wherever you get yours and at newstalk.com. My thanks as always to my producer, John Fardy. I'll see you next week.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one size all fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.